The opinions and views in the following program are that of the host and their guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of CJAM FM.
Time for You Talking to Me with your host, Big JD.
And you are listening to You Talking to Me. I'm your host, Big JD. Had to get a couple extra things in there on this new time slot. And wanted to remind everybody that Big JD and Lippo in the morning, a new morning show coming to CJAM tomorrow, Thursday morning at 8 o'clock. Hope you'll join us for that. And today I'm speaking with Katie Vanner Sylvester, who is a coordinator for the Canadian Diabetes Association. We'll be talking all about diabetes and the Canadian Diabetes Association. Katie, welcome to You Talking to Me.
Thank you for having me.
So maybe we can start off by talking a little bit about diabetes itself, the history behind diabetes. Do we know how far maybe that dates back when people realized that this was...
Well, actually, it dates back to the Egyptian times, where they used to say they had a certain name for it. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure you can say it on radio, actually.
Okay.
So they had a certain name for it because of the frequent urination that happens when you have diabetes, or one of the symptoms of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's documentation of it from back then all the way until to current day. Actually, this year we'll celebrate the 90th anniversary of the discovery of insulin this November coming. So it's been quite a long battle to get even to insulin. It's only 90 years old, and this is insulin.
Wow. And let's... maybe for listeners, you can, and I'm sure there are a lot of people familiar with diabetes. I mean, it seems that so many people have it, obviously, and I'm sure you'll tell us kind of how many right now we're looking at in Canada, but what exactly is diabetes? And it's two or three types, I guess it is?
Yep, there's three types of diabetes. The first is type 1 diabetes, and that is diabetes in general is an autoimmune disease. Mm-hmm. And with type 1 diabetes, what happens is the pancreas breaks down and no longer produces any insulin. And so the patient is immediately put on to multiple daily injections of insulin. It used to be considered that type 1 diabetes was only diagnosed in childhood, but we're seeing cases more and more of 40-year-olds, 50-year-olds, people who have had a prolonged illness developing type 1 diabetes. So it's no longer considered a juvenile diabetes, but type mm-hmm. 1. Then there's type 2 diabetes, which actually makes up about 90% of the population, of the diabetes population. And that's when the pancreas is either not producing enough insulin or is producing insulin, but the body isn't absorbing it properly. And so they have to go on to medication, or they can sometimes manage it with diet and exercise in order to stimulate the body to accept the insulin and to help the pancreas produce what's needed for the body. Okay. And then the last is gestational diabetes, and that is a condition that occurs during pregnancy only, so it only affects women. However, it does affect both the mother and the child after the delivery, because it puts both mom and child at a greater risk of developing type 2 diabetes later on in life. With gestational diabetes, it's usually diagnosed in the second to third or the second trimester of the pregnancy, and it does go away once the baby has been delivered.
Okay. And now the medical field, they're controlling. I mean, obviously, people that are living with diabetes control that in a few different ways, depending on what type they have. But as far as the medical field, what are some of the things that are available. There's pills that you can take depending on the type, or then there's insulin?
Absolutely. With type 1 diabetes, you don't go on to any of the oral medications because your pancreas is no longer producing insulin, and those oral medications stimulate the pancreas.
Okay.
So it's the cells that are surrounding the pancreas that have broken down and have said, no more insulin for you. And so that's when you go on to the multiple daily injections. You'll have both a long-term injection and a short-term injection. Your long-term injection is to get you through the day, just to live, you know, a healthy, happy day with normal glucose range. And the short-term injection of insulin is for every time you ingest a carbohydrate, and it takes care of breaking it down and putting it into the system properly.
Mm-hmm.
The oral medications are for people with type 2 diabetes, and they help, like I said, either stimulate the pancreas to produce more insulin or help the body fight off insulin resistance. As well, there's diet and exercise for all types of diabetes. It could be a benefit for all types of diabetes.
Right. Now, is there anything, I mean, I'm familiar with a couple of the different pills, and obviously there's insulin. Maybe we'll get into a little bit of the maybe there's different kinds of insulin. I think, isn't there synthetic, and then there's something from animals, I guess, or
there is still currently a beef and pork insulin on the market. It's very limited, and it's for only available for those who are actually allergic to the synthetic insulin.
Okay.
Right now, 99% of the insulin that people are taking is a synthetic insulin.
And is there anything new that's come on the market lately that's doing better or anything like that you guys are?
Yeah. Absolutely. Every day it seems that there's a new product or medication or device or supply that comes out onto the market. We have quicker testing, blood monitoring, glucose meters that go as quick as 5 seconds, and you'll have your reading from insulins that now last 24 hours for the entire day. So we're seeing more rapid acting insulins, so they're acting a lot quicker than they used to do. It used to take about 20 minutes for an insulin to kick in. Now it can be anywhere from 0 to 5 minutes for that insulin to kick in. And so we're seeing those changes and those growths every day. And from each different company, there seems to be more and more coming out onto the market.
What about the discovery of insulin?
Well, the discovery of insulin was actually happened on the 31st of October, and Sir Frederick Banting, who was actually in the Second World War, First World War, I apologize for that, was in the First World War, he opened a family practice, and in his area, nobody actually came to the family practice, and so he decided to go into science, and he believed that there was a cure out there for diabetes, because he was seeing far too many children die basically of starvation because of the disease. And so he began his research in diabetes and diabetes care. And one night, October 31st, he had a dream, and he woke up and he actually wrote down the recipe to insulin. And the rest is actually history.
Wow.
And this year we'll celebrate the 90th anniversary of the discovery of insulin.
And as well, I know, and maybe we'll get into this a little bit later as well, that you have an award that goes out, the Charles Best Award that goes out to, is it students or medical professionals that?
It goes out to a variety of people that have made a contribution.
I see.
There are 4 people accredited for the discovery of insulin: Dr. Mm-hmm. Sir Frederick Banting, Dr. Best, Dr. McLeod, and Dr. Collip. So there's actually 4 scientists involved and doctors involved in the discovery of insulin. Mm-hmm. And actually, our founder of the Canadian Diabetes Association is Charles Best.
Okay.
Is Dr. Best. And so that's why the award is named after him.
Very good. So we talked a little bit about, you know, some of the other things that are on the market, or how they're changing these things to be better. What about roadblocks in the research? Is there anything that, you guys might be aware of that are a struggle in finding
There's always roadblocks just because there's a lot of hoops to jump through whenever there's a new discovery. There's lots of different levels of testing that one has to go through in order to even have a medication device or supply approved by the Canadian government. Mm-hmm. So we see that as being a roadblock, but at the same time, it's for our own safety because we've seen so many medications come out onto the market that have later been, you know, pulled and have had major lawsuits over. And so we have strict standards here in Canada that prevent a lot of that from happening. And so although we hear about these great new advancements and we get a little bit down that they're not going to be here for a little while, maybe, you know, they might be 5 or 10 years away, when we do eventually get them, we'll be thankful for it because they'll actually work.
Very good. And I wanted to talk to you a little bit about testing. There's obviously medical testing for somebody who has diabetes or has been diagnosed or a way to be diagnosed, and then testing obviously for people that have diabetes. As far as like medical testing, glucose tolerance tests and things like that, what types of things do they do? Is that one of...
Well, the glucose tolerance test is for diagnosis.
Right.
And so a person would go into the medical laboratories and would have a blood glucose or a blood sample taken. They would then drink an orange concoction. They have to wait a couple of hours and then they're tested again. And if there's a spike in the level, that can lead to a diagnosis of diabetes. With other medical testing, when one is diagnosed with diabetes, it's recommended that there are actually three different tests that they would go through on a yearly basis, and one of which is the A1C test, which measures the percentile of glucose in the person's body on a three-month basis. So that's recommended that one would go through that test every 3 months. It's also recommended for a person with diabetes to go through an eye care medical exam, mm-hmm. At least once a year to make sure there's no damage to the eyes, because it can be either prevented or corrected before the person actually loses their vision.
Okay.
And of course, there's the testing for cholesterol and making sure that your cholesterol levels are intact and your heart is intact as well.
And so then somebody that actually has diabetes, the testing that they do, I mean, there's a fair amount of testing that you do yourself on a day-to-day basis, testing your blood and things like that?
Absolutely. When a person is diagnosed with diabetes, they're usually recommended to pick up a meter, either through their coverage plan or a lot of meters can be free right now with the purchase of test strips. So a person would get a personal glucose meter, and it's up to their doctor and the patient to make a decision as to how many times they would test per day,
mm-hmm.
Depending on the severity of the diabetes, what their sugar levels are at, whether or not they're showing any patterns in highs or lows throughout the day. Those decisions are made by the doctor and with the patient. But there is frequent, you know, daily testing involved with diabetes for both one and two and gestational.
Mm-hmm. And let's talk a little bit about statistics. How many people are suffering from diabetes?
Locally or in Ontario or Canada?
Let's start with local and then we'll move to Ontario and then we'll move to Canada.
It's estimated that there are about 50,000 or more people in Windsor Essex County living with diabetes.
Wow.
Which makes up about 9.9% of our population.
Mm-hmm.
It's also estimated that there's an additional 25,000 people who have diabetes and don't know it, which actually skyrockets our number to about 75,000 people in our community. So that's locally. In Ontario, we have over 1.1 million Ontarians living with diabetes, and that's all over the age of 18, so it's not even considering the children that are living with diabetes. All these statistics are of those who are over the age of 18.
Mm-hmm.
On a Canadian national level, it's estimated that there are 3 million people diagnosed with diabetes, and the scary statistic is that there's an additional 6 million people who either have it and don't know it or have something called pre-diabetes, which can then lead to type 2 diabetes in the future. So we're sitting at almost 9 million people who are affected by diabetes on a national level.
Wow. And some of the risk factors for diabetes, can you maybe tell us a little bit about those?
There's modifiable risk factors and non-modifiable risk factors. So the modifiable risk factors are some that most people have heard. Healthy body weight, or, you know, the risk factor if you don't have a healthy body weight, if you have high cholesterol, if you're overweight, you have heart problems. These types of things are the modifiable risk factors. Your fitness level, how often you exercise, things of that nature. The non-modifiable risk factors actually put almost all Canadians at some point in their life at risk of developing type 2 diabetes, because the non-modifiable risk factors for type 2 diabetes are things like your ethnic background. There are certain ethnic populations that are just predisposed to diabetes and developing diabetes, and that number skyrockets if they immigrate into North America. Other things are a blood relative with diabetes puts you at risk with developing type 2. Being simply over the age of 40 puts you at risk of developing type 2 diabetes.
And then symptoms of actually having diabetes, or for somebody that, you know, that doesn't know they have it, what kind of symptoms sometimes can arise?
When I mentioned the risk factors for diabetes, those are for type 2, and I forgot to mention that, so I wanted to make sure I said that. Those are for type 2. With type 1 diabetes, we don't know why it happens. We just know there's a breakdown in the immune system. Right. So I just wanted to say that before I proceeded with anything else. However, with the symptoms of diabetes, with type 1, they're very drastic and they come on very quickly. And you'll notice that there's something drastically wrong with a person within a couple of days, weeks, or months. And they can't go much longer than that without being diagnosed. And you'll see extreme thirst, constant urination, a rapid weight loss, and sometimes even a rapid weight gain. Irritation, mood swings. A lot of children are actually diagnosed with type 1 when parents start to notice that they're wetting their bed when they haven't wet their bed in years. So those are some of the risks, or some of the
symptoms
of diabetes. But with type 2 diabetes, what's interesting is that you can go on for years and not realize that you have it. You don't have the same drastic symptoms that type 1 has. And so it often takes a cold that you can't get over, or a cut or a bruise that won't go away, or your, you know, regular medical exam for the discovery of diabetes.
A lot of things that a lot of people wouldn't associate with diabetes, or that don't really know what diabetes is, or, you know, it affects and things like that, and have no idea that they actually have it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And what happens too is a person can get used to feeling terrible.
Right.
And it actually becomes the norm that you think you feel normal, but in fact you're not feeling normal, and your body just kind of gets used to it. And it's not until after diagnosis, when the glucose gets back into a normal range, that people start to say, oh wow, I can't believe how terrible I actually felt.
Yep. And it's I'm kind of amazed at how it affects the your eyes and your feet.
Absolutely. It's a nerve damage of what happens. And what happens when glucose is high is it gets very thick. And so the thicker it is as it's running through your system, the more chances you have of rupturing those nerves, of rupturing those veins and things of that nature. And so that's when you start to see diabetes retinopathy and diabetes neuropathy, which affects, you know, the feet, the neuropathy. Affects, you know, the feet, the hands, things of that nature. And the retinopathy is what affects the eyes. So that's why it's recommended so frequently to be checked out by your doctor, to have an eye exam at least once a year, so that you can see any of those marks or those lesions start to appear on your eyes and correct them if possible. And with neuropathy, it's most important to check your feet on a daily basis, because you start to lose the feeling in your feet. So you might have a cut or blister or sore that's infected, and that could be a warning sign for you that you didn't notice it and something might be wrong, and so you need to be checked out for that nerve damage.
And is it not extremities that get affected, like your hands too? I mean, you're...
Absolutely,
yeah.
Absolutely, but we see more commonly in the feet and the legs.
Yeah, okay. Once again, you're listening to You Talking to Me. I'm your host, Big JD, and I'm speaking with Katie Vanner Sylvester, who is a coordinator with the Canadian Diabetes Association. You're also in development there.
Absolutely.
What is that exactly?
That means I raise the funds.
Oh, okay.
I raise the money.
Good stuff.
Yeah, it's a great job, quite rewarding. We're a donor-based organization, and what that basically means is that we receive little to no government funding. The funding that we do receive from the government is for mostly like summer programs so that we can get summer interns into our offices and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
But a large variety of, or not variety, but a large percentage of the donations that we receive are strictly from corporations and individuals. And so it's my job to get out there, make sure people know about the Canadian Diabetes Association, all the fantastic work that we're doing, and engage them and build relationships with them so that they want to be involved in the Canadian Diabetes Association family and make a contribution.
Right, and then, which is obviously very important. And we'll talk more about your fundraising and events and things. When did the... I asked before, I think, about when we thought insulin... started there, but what about the Canadian Diabetes Association itself?
It's been about 50 years since the founder, Dr. Best, started the Toronto Diabetes Association.
Okay.
And it was just based in Toronto, and it quickly morphed into a larger scale where it was needed to have these diabetes centers all over Canada. And so now, today, we have over 150 offices across Canada. So there isn't a province that you'd go into that you wouldn't find a Canadian Diabetes Association office.
You guys also associated with the American
We're not associated with them, but we work with them.
Okay.
We try and work with, you know, all the diabetes groups, the diabetes education centers. We have great partnerships with them, and whenever possible, we try and work together as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. So about your support and research, like, do you guys, you obviously have events and fundraising things for the Canadian Diabetes Association for you guys to continue doing what you do, but what about like research and development and things like that, as far as insulin and medications, things like that, like, how do you guys support that?
Well, what I'm proud about with the Canadian Diabetes Association is that we support three levels of research. We invest more than $7 million a year in research, and it's Canadian-based research, and it's all grant-applied research. And the decisions are made by our team of scientists, doctors, nurses, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
We support three core areas of research, one, of course, being the cure-based research. We all want to see a cure to diabetes. But what the Canadian Diabetes Association understands and recognizes is that diabetes doesn't end with just a cure.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that that might sound a little surprising to some people, but for those people who have lived with diabetes for a significant amount of time, they may still develop the complications of diabetes well after being cured of the diabetes.
Right.
So we focus our efforts on cure-based as well as complication-based research, and then thirdly, on mental health-based research, because what's not widely known is about 60% of people living with diabetes will suffer from some sort of mental health issue at least once in their lifetime, if not more. And so we focus our research efforts on those three core areas.
Okay, and something else that's really important is your website. You have such a great amount of information on the website. Do we have the actual website address?
It's diabetes.ca.
Perfect.
Nice and simple.
Yes, and there's so much on there as far as media on the web, education tools. You have various publications and things like that, and as well volunteer opportunities.
Absolutely. You can donate right online if you want to contribute to the Canadian Diabetes Association. It's safe and secure. You can do an online application to volunteer in any of our offices across the country. You can download any of our publications for free. And if you have a project that you're working on or you need, you know, our publications in a pinch, you can go right online, download them, and print them off as many copies as you'd like. All of our resources that we provide to the community are free.
Mm-hmm.
And so we try and promote them as much as possible on the website and give out as much information as possible on our website.
And let's talk a little bit now about the events and fundraisers and things like that. What types of events do you hold? Like, you must have some yearly ones and then other things that come up from time to time?
We do. We actually just kind of resurrected an event that's very near and dear to my heart, the Flame of Hope Walk, Run, and Ride.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually started by a team of people that included my father when I was first diagnosed over 23 years ago. And it ran for several years. And unfortunately, in 2005, it was canceled. canceled due to restructuring within the association. Mm-hmm. And this past year, we brought it back and we met our goal and exceeded it quite substantially from what we have. And so we plan to bring it back on a yearly basis and have that as part of our core event, because mm-hmm. people really did miss it when it was gone. And people always asked us about it when it was gone. We also do a lot of third-party fundraising where we encourage individuals or corporations to put on a fundraiser on our behalf. Okay. And we kind of hold their hand while they're doing it. We lead them through all the stages of fund development, help give them resources, help give advice and suggestions, but ultimately they're the ones that put on the event. So it saves, you know, my time in some ways, because I'm not running around the city putting on an event. I can focus more on building relationships with those corporations and those individuals, but the corporation or the individual is putting on an event that will benefit us and our community. What's really important within development and with the Canadian Diabetes Association is that unless you designate your dollars to research, because we never know where research is just going to happen in Canada, mm-hmm. your donation stays within your postal code. So if you okay. give a donation and say it's in memory of someone out in BC, the donation will actually come back to the Windsor area because it's based on your postal code.
Wow.
Absolutely.
Good.
So our fundraising events vary depending on, you know, what third-party events we have going on, mm-hmm. what core events we have going on, and what campaigns we're running. And actually, a campaign that we're running right now is called the Corporate Challenge for a Cure, mm-hmm. where we're looking for 100 companies to donate $100 each so that we can invest $10,000 into our research efforts. And so on October the 19th, we'll actually have a kickoff and networking event at Solo Tool and Mold to kick off the Corporate Challenge for a Cure. And that's just one of, you know, the small mm-hmm. things for development. We also do health fairs. We do speaking okay. engagements. And these are all free things.
Mm-hmm. And these are all on the website?
All
you,
on the
you
website.
You post all these, so yeah.
Absolutely, they're all on the website. And actually, you can listen to or see the PowerPoint presentations of our presentations that we're going to come out and show you.
Okay.
So if you're an organization, if you're in a class or a corporation that wants to learn more about diabetes, you just simply give us a call. We book a time. You tell us how much time we've got, and we'll have our presentation to fit your time and your needs.
Now, are there any new things in development with the Canadian Diabetes Association that you're, you know, putting together or maybe want to implement in the future?
Well, obviously our advocacy efforts are almost number one at this point in
right.
time.
Mm-hmm.
With the elections coming on board or coming up very closely, we are advocating very strongly to our provincial candidates to continue on with the funding for the provincial diabetes strategy. So that's one of our lead focuses. As well, November Diabetes Awareness Month is coming. It's just around the corner. And so all of November is Diabetes Awareness Month, and World Diabetes Day, which is actually recognized by the UN, is November the 14th, which is actually the birthday of Sir Frederick Banting.
Okay. Great. Really appreciate you being on the show. The website, once again, is
diabetes.ca.
Easy enough. And thank you for being on the show, Katie.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Great. And I just want to remind everybody once again that Big JD and Lippo will be on tomorrow morning, Thursday morning. Thursday's at 8 so far. I think that time may change in the future, but Thursday's at 8 a.m., Big JD and Lippo in the morning. And next week, of course, same time, this new time, for me, with you talking to me on Wednesdays at 4 p.m. And I'll see everybody next week. Thanks for listening.